Nothing beats the hobo life, stabbing folks with my hobo knife.
This is the Extra Hot Crate Podcast, episode 300.
Wow!
For the week of April 27th, 2020. I am pizza top with side eye, David T. Cole, and I'm here with murder gene, Sarah D. Bunting.
Science!
Second string prosecutor, Tara Ariano.
And how did you feel after Jacob was arrested?
And garage door tagger, Allison Loha.
Not again.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. Oh, we are attacking this lead topic with the seriousness it deserves, and I'm so happy. Joining us to do so is our old friend, Allison Lohuff. Hello, Allison.
Hello.
Yay!
We are here to talk about Defending Jacob, the new Apple TV Plus show. Here is the premise. It's based on a novel by the same name. Prosecutor Andy, played by Chris Evans, and his wife, who works for a nonprofit, I guess she's a social worker of some kind, Lori, played by Michelle Dockery in her Boston-y accent, live in Newton, Mass. With their young teen son, Jacob, played by Jaden Martell. By the way, formerly Jaden Lieberher, but then like after he had a couple of credits under his belt, he just like changed his last name. That kid's slippery. Keep an eye on him. Don't trust him. A kid in Jacob's class, whose name is Ben Rifkin, is found stabbed to death in some woods. A friend of Jacob's posts a comment on Instagram accusing Jacob of doing it. And what do you know? Turns out Jacob does have a knife in his nightstand, which Andy finds. And Andy and Pam, played by Betty Gabriel, who's the investigator that Andy was working with before he was removed from the case for obvious reasons, we're looking at this other guy, an ex-con named Leonard Patz, played by Daniel Henshall. Based on what the viewer sees, sure seems like he did it. Nevertheless, other evidence also points to Jacob, and he gets arrested, and we watch the effects of on the family as the case proceeds.
I have a proposal just so that it's easier for everybody at home to follow.
Okay.
Andy's Captain America.
Right.
Lori is
Lady Mary. Yeah. Okay. Great. So I know it's based on a novel. From the title to the poster, this whole thing is like a spoof prestige show from The Good Wife.
Yes.
In my opinion. Allison, were you able to take it seriously when it took itself more seriously than anything in the universe ever has?
I absolutely was not. This is the kind of like parental horror porn that I truly have come to hate.
Yeah.
Especially since becoming a parent. But like, it's like they decided after the like 90s and early 2000s, like, okay, we're tired of telling them all the ways their child is going to be kidnapped and raped. So now what we're going to do is make them wonder what would happen if their child was the murderer. So I just like, it's such a cliche, and they hit every mark on the cliche list when making it, I think.
Yeah, it really felt to me like the people involved in making this had never before come across a story where someone seems like they're guilty, but maybe they're not. Like, this exactly. is the subject of at least one episode of every crime procedural. Plus, by the way, also the 1996 movie Before and After, where parents have to decide what to do when it seems like their son maybe killed someone. And in that one, that kid was also named Jacob, by the way, and played by Edward Furlong. And the parents were Meryl Streep and Liam Neeson. So, you know, not great, but a better project all around. Sarah, you are a veteran of many crime procedurals. Did this one work for you in terms of surprise or interest?
Neither.
Yeah.
There's just something about, like, this has all the, like, it checks all the sort of visual boxes of a mm-hmm. prestige show. And it checks all the like flexibility and permissiveness as to like language and nudity boxes of a prestige show. But it has the ear and soul of an ABC like summer burn off garbage time. Like, I know I'm the only one who watched all of Secrets and Lies starring Ryan Phillippe and Julia Lewis, but it's that with more swears and more blue gels.
Exactly. I was going to say, it's color grade change and a couple actors away from being a lifetime take on the same story.
Yeah.
We need to talk about Jacob. Maybe? Question mark.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally had that in my notes.
Yeah. I was going to say this. They tried it and missed.
Yeah. I mean, then there's so many elements. I mean, Dave alluded to this in his intro where it's like, is it your first day? The family yes. going to the pizza place in their town, like after the kid's been arrested, yeah. like the dad is a prosecutor. But even if right. he wasn't, like, you know better. This is obviously already a shit show. Like, you can't go out in public as a family and not expect your pizza's going to get spat on, which we don't see happen, but presumably it was.
Well, or like Newton, Mass is not teeny. Like, it's right there next to Boston. So either you live in a small town, which Newton is not, which you would know better than to go out in public, or nobody's really going to be looking at you. Like, maybe one person would recognize you, but it's not country come to town night in Newton, Mass. Like, I don't know. That was dumb. And many of the legally things are also dumb.
Yes.
Like, don't have him be a prosecutor. Why is that necessary? Mm-hmm. It's not.
I mean, I guess that was their twist on the genre. It was like, oh, and he's also the guy that would have been prosecuted. And it's like, this is like a bad episode of SVU mm-hmm. if Ice-T's son maybe killed another person, you know?
Again.
Yeah, again.
Sorry.
The second time.
But the other problem with the whole pizza thing is that it assumes everybody in that universe is stupid. It also mm-hmm. assumes the audience is kind of dumb. Like, this is your first crime story ever. Like,
right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
True crime and crime stories is such like a big business and so popular right now that you can shorthand a lot to yep. get to the stuff that you're doing differently or better or whatever.
Yes.
And this program doesn't do that. It takes its sweet ass time getting to the point. I mean, this is obviously a TV length story that's been expanded into a limited series.
It was 3 hours that could have been one for sure.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yes. Yeah, absolutely.
All of the hours were dishonest mm-hmm. to the audience and were trying to create tension by like double dealing. And I have watched enough true crime just in the last 72 hours to resent this. Never mind what else I'm up to the yes. rest of, in the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I only watched the first three episodes, mm-hmm. but I understand that J.K. Simmons shows up
yeah.
at some point.
Oh.
And I mean, which, you know, now I'm like, well, shit, now I have to watch the rest of it because you know, he's amazing. But does that save it is the question I'm asking.
Cherry Jones didn't for
I
me.
I know, I was like, about to say.
You know?
Everybody in this, I wondered, why did they do this? Like, did you have a weekend that you're like, yeah, let me throw in some stuff here because
beep,
I don't.
Beep, beep. That's the sound of the dump truck full of money.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Probably.
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, if I could go on with my problems with this, but at this point, it just feels sort of peevish. Like, I'm not going to be watching it. I don't care how many J.K. Simmonses they trot out for it. Like, you know, like starting with the characterization of Jacob, like, I don't think that kid is a bad actor. But the characterization of him is totally inconsistent. Like in the first few moments, he seems totally normal, like normal with his parents, has a friend who comes over to play video games. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and then when he was a kid, he almost caved a kid's head in with a bowling ball. Like, where did that come from?
Right.
What?
Right. Mm-hmm. That really made me
now
mad.
Now he has no acting out problems. Like, this is what I mean about it being dishonest. Like, depending on what it wants to do in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the kid like, for you know, we need to talk about Jacob, like right. Dave said, or he's just your average kid. And I think this really could have benefited from having it be entirely from the perspective of all the kids.
Yeah.
In town.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think they're going to be able to do anything new with the, like, you know, the prosecutor is taking it. Personally, like, where have I seen this before? Oh, that's right.
Everywhere.
All day on Ion. Who cares? Like, I feel bad for the actors. They're doing the best they can, but this is like DOA. Mm-hmm. Don't get up. Yeah. I'll fire myself. Can we talk just for a second, though, about Allison's opener? Because only on TV and in the movies do A, angry townsfolk graffiti garage doors.
Yeah.
And B, like, since they've done it, just leave it so that they don't do it again. Like, don't repaint it and give them a fresh canvas. That's always bugged me. I am not a crackpot.
It's giving me an idea, though. I kind of want to spray paint my garage door. It says, "You're doing a great job, Dave."
Well, then no one else will have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Save you the trouble.
And they always try to scrub it off first. Yeah. Like, they always try to scrub
paint.
It. You can't scrub all spray paint.
Everybody knows a spray paint doesn't come off. It's molecularly bonded to what's it's been sprayed on. It drives me nuts. I went on for like 3 minutes with Charles. Like, this is every time with the sponge and the, it's not coming off. What a metaphor. The spray paint's a metaphor.
But surely my Mr. Clean Magic Eraser, no!
Damn you, Krylon! Or whatever that thing's called.
Krylon.
Krylon!
And it's like they just get more and more desperate to scrub it. Then they finally paint it. I mean, and then why wouldn't somebody do it again? Like, that's, you know.
Yeah, thank you.
It's really stupid.
Why was it all pretty neat, all caps, except for the I was dotted? Like,
that's what I was going to say that, but I thought, no, that's too niche. I'm not going to bring that up.
Welcome to my world.
Like, the handwriting on this murder spray paint is too neat.
I don't think violence is the answer to anything, but if you're going to murder one person in Newton, I think it's the guy that dots his capital I's. Case closed.
I think it was Barb from 90210.
Oh, Barb, God bless. Yeah. Allison, I implore you to love yourself enough to not continue watching this show. Just read the
book. I want to know what happens, but I don't want to watch it. Yeah. I do want to know.
Read the plot summary of the book. That'll tell you where the story goes. Okay. Like, you have better things to do in life. Honestly. And so does the listener. Don't watch the show. It was dumb and bad.
That's a good summary.
Yeah.
All right, let's go around the dial, talk about other things that we've been watching that are not Defending Jacob. Tara.
Okay, the final season of Vita on Stars, Sob. It just premiered this past Sunday. The premise, as I've talked about it many times, sisters Emma and Lynn come back to L.A. because their mother, whose name is Vidalia, Vita for short, has died. Vita has a lot of secrets that come out after she has passed. Slowly, the first big one is that she married a woman after they left town, which is weird because she seemed like kind of a homophobe to Emma, who was queer. More comes out a lot, you know, about the business that she ran. And at the end of season two, we found out the biggest secret that she also kept from her wife, which was that her husband, Victor, who is the girl's father, was supposedly deported to Mexico where he died, but nope, he's alive in Los Angeles and a pastor at a storefront church. So that's like one of the big dramas that season three is kind of organized around. We also get some stuff with Emma's relationship with Nico, the amazing Roberta Calindres. Love her from Fun Home. It's frustrating to watch, but feels real. It's a real one step forward, two steps back process for the two of them. And, Lynn, unfortunately, takes back up with Rudy, the city councilor, who has been controlling since they met and only gets more so when he thinks that he's locked her down and now also has a controlling mother played by Lydia Porto from the Get Shorty show on Epix. Lynn wants to meet Victor, their father, because her damage has made it so she wants men to love her and doesn't care how. And keeping this secret from Emma predictably causes problems. And what this season does well in the small amount of time that it has is show how very small issues between the sisters sort of get hand waved away instead of resolved. And then they kind of add up and accrete and blow up in, you know, ways that you sadly can see coming. They also do really interesting stuff with the character of Mari, played by Chelsea Rendon, who's sort of a neighborhood activist. One of the early episodes, she's riding by on her bike when she sees a whole phalanx of ICE agents like beating on a guy's car while he is cowering inside, and they finally smash his window and pull him out, and includes among the agents a guy who's Latinx, which is especially upsetting to her. She films the whole thing and she's been posting them online, and she gets an offer for a job at a company called Charged. This is a mild spoiler because it happens in the finale, but she goes to this office and it's like every cliche of like cool media signifiers, like there's air plants. They bring her a kombucha. He's like, the producer that brings her in is like, I love your stuff. You're going to have so much freedom to do whatever you want. She's like, yeah, but you're owned by this huge media conglomerate. Like, are they really going to let me continue being, being, you know, political? And he's like, totally, you'll be a freelancer, so you'll get to do whatever you want. And this is like extremely coded for anyone who works in media as like a huge bait and switch of like, oh, this shingle is going to get shut down in 9 months. Like, Maria's going to be fucked. She will have to give up on even getting her invoices paid. But like, it's very subtle in a way that I appreciate it as someone who works in media. Anyway, when this final third season ends, the entire thing will have only been 22 half-hour episodes. So, you know, I know it seems daunting, 3 seasons if you haven't ever watched it. But, you know, if you haven't, even despite all of my screaming about it, it's a quick trip. It's very much worth your time. So Vita on Stars, check it out. And you can also read me about it. I wrote about the final season at Vanity Fair. And also last week at Vanity Fair, I wrote about the Will and Grace re-finale. The revival ended again, weirdly, almost exactly the same way as the very first finale, except worse. So we'll link to both of those in the show notes. Will and Grace, Don't Come Back. And that's it for me.
Allison, your turn.
I'm going to talk about the there's a show on MHC Choice, which is a streaming service, in case you don't know, that showcases foreign shows. None of them are in English. They're all subtitled. They're all amazing. I write there, and I mostly write about crime shows. But this show is from Spain. It's called Arde Madrid. And I know I'm pronouncing that like someone from Alabama, because that's what I am. It is this, it came out last year. It was a humongous hit in Spain. It's set in 1961. It is like this comedy, drama, art, film, 30-minute episodes thing that is just like so amazing. It's in Spanish, obviously. It's about this hard-ass lady who's a member of sort of like the female section is what it's called. She's a Francoist in Franco, Spain. And she's like super tough. Franco decides to send her to spy on Ava Gardner, who truly did come to Spain in 1961 after her divorce from Frank Sinatra. She has to pretend to be married to this nephew of like some bigwig in the army, who is like this. His name is Manolo. He's this hustler. He's gorgeous. And like, it's hilarious, the stuff that happens when they're in this house. Interestingly enough, Ava Gardner in this show is played by Debbie Mazar.
What?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Debbie Mazar. Yeah. And she's incredible in it. And like, she's drunk most of the time, as Ava Gardner was. That's why she got a divorce from Frank Sinatra. And she really did, in 1961, go and live in Spain. And it was like this really wild thing in Madrid. Like, they have plaques about it. Like, she lived here for this period of time. And like, Franco wanted her spied on because, of course, she was bringing in all this Western influence and everybody was partying and like living lavishly and, you know, having these insane parties where like little people were like peeing in plants. And, you know, like, it's like, it's really surreal at some points. The show is really funny. It's shot in black and white, so it's even more like of the period. And I loved it. I wrote a preview of it. It's fantastic.
That sounds really cool.
It's the preview is on the MHC Choice blog.
Excellent. We will link to that in the show notes.
I'm here to talk about The Last Dance. It is not about dance. It is the 10-part history of the Chicago Bulls' last championship drive in the late 90s. It's airing on ESPN right now in the 4 parts that have aired as of this recording. It is also about, among other things, introducing the rest of the world to Roy Williams, the most bearably folksy basketball coach alive. And for my fellow Heels fans out there, was anyone else weirded out to hear him even say freaking in the first like night of episodes? Like, usually dad gum is as strong as he's willing to go. That was practically a string of bleeps for old Roy. It's also about Dennis Rodman. It's about Scottie Pippen, who not for nothing needs to begin a second act as an audiobook narrator because his voice is like the earth itself is speaking. And according to some reviewers, Last Dance is also about underlining what a brusque dick Jordan was and is to teammates. It's Michael Jordan, obviously, but I'm not really seeing what makes him any more of a jerk than anyone else. To be honest, like, are we supposed to be scandalized that he said in so many words that that Cartwright guy couldn't sink shots in that championship game? You think Cartwright didn't know that he kept just the tipping easy twos from the paint? I think he was aware. Anyway, feel free to at me. I'm not Jordan's lawyer. And if you think he's a pill, I'm not going to be mad at you. I don't care that much. I'm just not seeing where giving a shit about your job when the franchise's entire weight is on you is bad. Anyway, in the before time, I would have been like, 10 episodes on a single season? Stick it in a blog, Jason Hare. But the thing is, it's very entertaining. It gets a lot of basketball stories into the series around the edges. And I'm pretty sure we're not getting NBA playoffs or any kind of baseball this year. I need this. I thank ESPN for making it and for dragging it out over like 5 weeks. I appreciate it. And that will eventually come to Netflix. So if you cut the cord, that should be there by the end of next month, I think, for my plug. Upcoming Blotter Presents include an interview that my colleague and Blotter interviewer at large, Kevin Smokler, did with Criminal's Phoebe Judge. And one Allison Lohuff will be joining me to talk about John Watson on a BBC show. So look out for that. That's the Blotter Presents, wherever you download podcasts.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but I have definitively cracked how they could have saved the limited series devs from going up its own asshole towards the end of the program. Here's how it works. In devs, they build this computer machine that lets them accurately see what happened in the past with a 100% degree of accuracy. This is demonstrated in the show by going back to see Jesus on the cross. But what about life's great mysteries? And here's the one that needs to be solved from devs. You remember when you are in grade school and you and your buddies would try to come up with new and great verses to the mysterious diarrhea song? Who started the diarrhea song? A song that will live forever. A song enjoyed by children everywhere in the world.
And adults.
And adults constantly being added to, contemporized, whether you're the lowliest servant or lord of the manor. You enjoy a good verse of the diarrhea song. Now, if you're not familiar with the diarrhea song, let me introduce it to you. First, you would describe a common activity, such as when you're driving in your car. Mm-hmm. And then we follow that up with the introduction of something that portends the entrance of an unwelcome visitor, such as, and your house is just too far. And then the tragic diagnostic confirmation, diarrhea. Now, if the devs team used that computing power to go back into the 60s and figure out who was the one individual that first came up with the diarrhea song so that we can find out where they lived, erect the world's biggest statue to them in their town in honor of them creating the diarrhea song, I think devs could have been one of the highlights of the year, frankly. I am not a crackpot. On the next extra, extra hot great is the Cantnon. Things that will never get into the canon, perhaps not by fault of their own. Mm-hmm. That is available to all sponsors of any level. They're at the patreon.com/extrahotgreat site. Then on Friday, we're continuing with our quarantine helpers, even though some states are doing that thing where they're opening up. Dumb, don't do it. Don't go anywhere. Stay inside.
Some states, ours.
Yeah. we will be giving you the Cola Wars, which was a reaction to a documentary from a few months ago, but mostly it's us talking about soda pop. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And then next week on the Prime EHG episode, we welcome back Kevin O'Keefe to talk about Hollywood, the show, not the town, even though I'm sure the town is somewhat a character in the show, I hope.
No doubt.
Gosh, I love it when shows do that.
By the time you hear this, the poll will have closed and our Patreon supporters will have decided what show Dave and Sarah will have each been forcened to watch. It's sure looking like it's going to be The Goop Lab for Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And Parks and Recreation, for some reason, for Sarah, even though by rights it should be Avenue 5.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe they like Sarah and don't want to throw her a softball.
They'll find out that that's not liking Sarah. We'll see. Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Dan Casino. He calls it the upside of evil twins, and Dan writes, what show would be improved by replacing one of the lead characters with their metaphorically or literally goateed evil twin from the Mirror Universe? How would the dynamics of the show change? I'll go first since I'm here. I'm going to go with Katie Keene. As is the case with a lot of shows, the title character here is the least interesting one compared to Dawson Leary of Dawson's Creek. Katie is a fireball of charisma and charm. There's nothing actively objectionable about her, but this is also a show with an Anna Delvey-esque scammer and a part-time drag queen who just totally had a hot gay threesome on the CW, so she's really getting eclipsed by her fellow characters. Enter Katie Keene's goateed evil twin sister from the Mirror Universe, Crooked Keene. Instead of working hard at her apprenticeship with fashion designer Guy Lamontagne at Lacey's department store, Crooked Keene comes at the job with an attitude of chaotic evil, repaying Guy's slights against Katie by sabotaging his line from within, adding invisible flaws to her tailoring so that sample garments fall apart at inopportune times, leaving smelly food on the radiator in the studio overnight, failing to pass on design notes from his financiers, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe Guy will learn to be nicer to the little people after his career collapses. Also, Crooked Keene and her goatee will bring a genderqueer element the show has been missing, and I hope start having wild pansexual love scenes all over Katie Keene's adorable vintage-inspired Spanish Harlem bedroom, because Katie is getting trounced by all her friends in this department, too. Sarah.
I really had trouble choosing just one or narrowing it down. But then lightning struck in the form of eating dinner in front of Law and Order, as it so often does in so many different ways. So I would not have minded seeing Claire Kincaid joined by, I don't know what you name the goateed evil twin, Cleo Kincaid?
Lack of care Kincaid.
There it is. Don't Claire Kincaid. I loved Claire, but she could have stood to push back on some interviewee bullshit in the research phase of the proceedings in the episodes, and to take some more relish in some of Jack's sketchier maneuvers. And it's not like he isn't attracted to that. See the entire episode devoted to his previous trick, Diana What's-Her-Face, who was played by Livia Soprano, young Livia Soprano.
So good.
The beauty part is that you can have them on screen at the same time. You just use Jill Hennessy's real-life twin, Jacqueline, who, I learned, did sub in for Jill Hennessy on a Law & Order episode when Jill's shooting schedule for a homicide crossover episode conflicted with Motherships. That season 6, episode 11, Corpus Delicti. I never knew that, and now I'm going to look out for it and see if she has any lines or if they just like put a, you know, mop head in a chair and told her to look pretty. Anyway, just part her hair on the other side, form fit those boxy suits a little better. Instant evil twin, Amanda Woodward style. So
love
that's
it.
Fine.
That's amazing.
Allison.
I had trouble with this too, because most of the shows that I really love have like a built-in foil for the main characters. But I thought of my favorite show of recent years, Call the Midwife.
Mm.
Mrs. Dr. Sheila Turner.
Yep.
Huh.
Very badly needs an evil twin because she is so boring and has nothing to do. She is a true sweetheart, mm-hmm. but she needs an evil twin whose name would be Morag McDonald.
Yep. Uh-huh.
She would be 6'3". She would never put her hair up.
in a sensible French twist, her files would be a mess every time one of these smart mouth poplar moms gets hot in the maternity home. She would say, you know, shut your pie hole, you stupid bitch, and like shove their baby into an incubator, light up a cigarette, swig, you know, a shot of whiskey, and I don't know, pee in a trash can or something. These are the opposite qualities of Sheila Turner, and she badly needs to face this person on the battlefield.
Also, her singing voice would be horrible.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
While we're on Call the Midwife, this is not my choice, but I have an idea, and I'll do it as a scene. All right, just one more push. All the babies are born with goatees, and they're all legal.
Perfect.
Would watch.
Tara was suggesting for a while that we watch Succession. So my idea is that Lou Grant from the Mary Tyler Moore Show suddenly gets Logan Roy's goatee and becomes, in spirit, a very Logan Roy-esque character in the newsroom.
Yes.
So he first goes on a buying spree and he buys all the other radio and TV outlets in the Twin Cities and turns them all into conservative, bile-spewing stations.
Yeah.
And then he does stuff like he brings in Ted Knight into his office, he yells at him and tells him, fuck off, and you know. And then strings Mary Richards along for that promotion, you know, and pits her against other people in the office. Mm-hmm. Just generally being a sort of old white male alpha dick because he can be, because nobody has the balls to say boo to him.
Yep.
I'd watch that.
It is time for the canon. This week it is a user submission. Take it away, Eleanor.
Hey, Extra Hot Great. I'm submitting for consideration for entry into the canon an episode of a classic American sitcom about six 20-something friends and neighbors, some of whom are roommates, living and loving and trying to make it in the Big Apple. Yes, of course, I'm talking about Living Single. And I hope you'll induct Living Single Season 1, Episode 6, Great Expectations, into the canon. I recently heard a pin drop after a Game Time question was asked about this show, so let me give a little background. Living Single is a sitcom about four close friends living in a 90s kind of world in Brooklyn. Khadijah, Sinclair, and Regine are roommates. Their friend Maxine Shaw, attorney at law, hangs at their place often. Their upstairs neighbors, handyman Overton, and womanizer and potentially reformable fuckboy Kyle, come in and out, usually uninvited, to do various hijinks. As a person who's not typically a sitcom watcher, Living Single found its way into my heart fast and still has a special place there for a lot of reasons. For starters, the obvious. Throughout the series run, Living Single explores the multiplicity of the Black experience in a way that few shows did or do, and it embraces that fact with ease. Also, Living Single, with its women-driven storylines and the semi-realistic housing accommodations of its central characters, flips the sitcom script throughout the series. Its warmest moments are among its four central women. Although competitive with themselves and each other, they ride or die for each other when it matters. I'll present my case for why this episode is canon-worthy in a short list. 1. Living Single hits its stride early because of the great chemistry between its actors and characters, so this early season 1 episode works as a standalone or as a good rewatch for a longtime fan of the show. The friendships feel lived in from the jump, so the funny, often wordless moments between characters land without too much exposition. This is only the 6th episode of the show, but the show trusts its audience to understand what's going on and who these people are. If you're a first-time watcher, the jokes in the plot and Great Expectations stand on their own without requiring background knowledge. 2. Great Expectations features one of the greatest pop culture and real-life tropes of all time: women gassing each other up in the bathroom. Usually it happens at the club, but here it happens while the girls get ready to go to the club. They get dolled up, Regine puts on her ponytail, Sinclair rubs magazine sample perfume onto her neck, and the girls sing Brick House together while looking at themselves in the mirror. 3. I love how this episode pokes fun at Kyle. It's like if TLC's No Scrubs became a television episode. And even though this is a woman-centric show, the men on the show still aren't a monolith. Overton is Kyle's best friend, but still recognizes his behavior as ridiculous and tells Kyle as much. Usually, when men talk like Kyle does on sitcoms, it's because the writers endorse their opinions. See, e.g., every sitcom involving a schlub dad lamenting something the old ball and chain made him do. Sure, Kyle's bit is played for its own laughs. It's the 90s. But it's other characters' reactions to it and the groans from the studio audience that are the proxy for the viewers. Please also induct Kyle's going out vest into the canon. Fourth and finally, we should all demand justice for Erica Alexander, and she gets it here.
Yes.
Alexander started in her role as Max on Living Single shortly after her two-season stint as Cousin Pam on The Cosby Show, and Living Single was always what she deserved. If you'll allow me a brief detour, I recommend Eshan Crawley's amazing essay about Cousin Pam on the site Seven Scribes. Crawley writes of Cousin Pam, quote, "Cousin Pam was an empty vessel waiting to be filled with morals, ethics, and values of the aspirational class," end quote. Max, on the other hand, is anything but. She drives the show in a lot of ways, and her ease playing scenes with the regulars and the guest actors is part of what makes the show so great. Alexander's brilliant physical comedy is less on display in this episode than it is in others, but her timing and her ability to make a mountain out of a one-liner really shine in this episode. Great Expectations has what made Living Single so great. The strong friendships among the four main women, Regine's wig changes, the struggles of dating when you're way too picky but know you probably deserve to be, the tender and hilarious interactions between Overton and Sinclair, and the evergreen struggle between takeout and going out on a Saturday night after the work week totally ground you down. I hope you'll induct this episode into the Extra Hot Great canon. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, Eleanor. Allison, you chose this. Why don't you go first?
First of all, that was an excellent submission, and I hope it won't be Eleanor's last. I am the perfect person to submit this to because I am a huge Living Single fan. I've seen every episode many times, and I completely 100% agree with just about everything she said about it, especially about Erica Alexander, who I think is one of the most undersung comedic actresses ever. I mean, she is so brilliant and she's so good on this show. And Kim Fields as well is brilliant in it. And Queen Latifah. I love them all in this. They're my three favorite characters in this show. And their storylines are great. That as the seasons went on, it became really rich. This episode feels piloty to me still. It's the sixth season. It's the sixth episode of the first season again. And I found it an interesting choice. Although rewatching it, I still did laugh really hard at everything Maxine went through in the club with the guy with the gold tooth. I absolutely love that stuff. And she is such a natural comedian. It is an excellent episode of the show. And I agree with all the great tropes, especially getting ready in the bathroom and everything. I thought that was really cute. I don't know. I'm not sure I consider it to be the best episode of Living Single, even of that season, but I do love it.
Okay, I'll go next. I'm sure I've seen Living Single, but I was not a regular watcher of it. And I found it charming. I could see that it was, I see Eleanor's point that it feels assured for such an early episode. You do definitely feel that the writers know these characters and the actors know these characters, even though it's only episode six. They do feel locked in. And I didn't feel I was lost. Not that it's a very complicated premise. This isn't the Americans. I get it. But but there was a lot to like. I agree with her that the chemistry among the characters is great. The women gassing each other up in the bathroom is very funny. And the cut from the women to, men don't have to do this. Cut to Kyle in the bathroom singing "You Are Everything" to himself was very funny. the outfits on poor Queen Latifah as Khadija, her going out outfit, what the hell was she even
through
wearing?
The whole series.
Oh my
the whole
God.
Series. That's her look, though. It's okay. Always pants and a blouse for some reason.
Oh, girl.
Those
yeah.
jeans
I know.
Are tragic. I know. And then on her necklace was like a very chunky gold chain, which fine. And then it looked like it had a car key on it. Like, it I just does. Don't I don't get it.
But that's her personally. Queen Latifah always wears that.
Okay. Yeah, the gold tooth guy with the beeper on his velour pullover, very funny. Overton and Sinclair doing their 90s dancing, cute. Like, it's a very 90s moment, clearly. It is, as the song says and as Eleanor referenced, it is a 90s kind of world.
It made like, that made me laugh out loud. I've never seen this show before. And I looked, did I hear that correctly? Was it like a contemporary reference to the life they are living in the 90s in the show? They know I was going to listen to this. 20 years later or whatever, you know?
Yes. A funny thing that Insecure does every season is they have a show that all of the characters are obsessed with. And I think in season 2, everyone was obsessed with a reboot of like a show like this, where it was like a black 90s sitcom. It might have been along the lines of Martin. But yeah, it was. So a lot of these tropes were familiar to me from like just being spoofed on Insecure as well. Anyway, I agree with Allison that like story wise, there's not a lot here. It doesn't seem like this is a huge turning point for season one or anything. But at the same time, it's like, this is charming. Like, I get watching this episode made me realize I understood why people would like this show, and it made me want to like watch more. I don't know if I would go out of my way to seek it out, but if it was on, I would definitely be interested in watching it. Is that a canon pick? I don't know. Let's keep talking. Sarah.
Well, I mean, you know that one of my criteria is, did I let it flip over on the streaming service to the next one and keep going, which I did for a few minutes. I agree with the charming assessment. That's exactly what it is. Is that enough?
Yeah.
I feel like we all agree that Erica Alexander's performance should go in the canon, and maybe the rest of it is not quite there. But her hoovering Lomaine and digging on that she's going to get to learn the conclusion of a Barnaby Jones two-parter. My people.
Yeah.
I used to watch Living Single. I feel like it was on in between one thing I was actually watching and something else I was actually watching. So it's sort of like, half watch that. It's like, well, this is the half hour in which I pee and then start dinner, whatever. And so I wasn't necessarily paying attention, but I have seen a few episodes and they're all kind of at this level, which is like extremely well done and competent, solid B+ right down the fairway, but not essential. Like, if, you know, if the power cuts out, you're not going to be like, So yeah, I don't know. And also I don't actually have a lot of context for whether this is a great episode of the show. This was diverting and charming, but I'm not sure that's enough. I did really, really want Chinese food though, after that opening scene. And the theme song is like, I love that it's like self-consciously dated even during its own lifetime.
It was like you're digging up dinosaur bones and there's a plaque that says carbon dated to blah, blah. It's like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if
like,
you guys.
Well, I also am glad I've got my girls in a, you know, a teens kind of world. Like, what is happening? But that 90s TV could sometimes just be so like, I don't know how to put it, like involuntarily normcore about itself. Mm-hmm. You'd just be like, oh, that didn't work out for you, did it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was an excellent presentation, but I'm still not sure how I'm going to vote. Dave.
You had a thought there, Allison?
Oh, I was going to say, I don't know if you guys remember this from Kimmy Schmidt, and I think a few times in 30 Rock, they do reference Living Single, and they reference the song specifically. So this song is sort of like, I think in comedy rooms, sort of like an underlying joke. I've seen it come up a few times in a few shows.
Nice.
Yeah, that would have went over my head at the time. Yeah. I don't see what's canon worthy about this insofar that it wasn't like a giant revelation to me that this was like a singularly hilarious episode of television or it had a moment that was amazing. It seemed assured and it seemed to know its characters, as she said, and everybody agrees with. I think the best of that was the character that we're first introduced to watching TV, whose name is
Sinclair.
She's eating yogurt with like, I don't know, like a Dunkaroo stick or something like that.
Yeah.
Like never commented on, never referenced by another character. This is just how this person who loves being at home and watching TV eats yogurt with a like sugar wafer or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought that was like, all right, you've painted a picture of that character in under 1 second. And I know who this person is. And then we find out she wants to stay at home to watch shit TV. And you're like, okay, got it. Yep. Perfect. Such an economical introduction to the character.
Yeah.
This credits, amazing. The song, the credits, everything. I was saying, like, it's a school binder of the period come to life.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, everything about that was just absolutely of its era. You know how, like, people do parodies now of the 80s? And like they never lived in the 80s and they got some things right, but they overdo it. Mm-hmm. Like everything is vaporware and VCR tracking mistakes. And that is the 80s now, you know, yeah. generation where it's not, you know, that wasn't really the case. Like vaporware was such a small part of the aesthetic of, you know, the decade and everything. Right. But that's what it is. And I feel like if you tried to do this type of 90s B sitcom kind of thing, you couldn't do a better job than this does itself with the credits. There was a joke here that I misheard and then went back to clip it and it wasn't the same joke. So I just want to say, I think I misheard a better joke than they did in the show. I'll play you the actual line. And this is when the two guys are getting ready after, you know, the scene with the girls getting ready.
Damn, man, is that you? Yeah, you like it? It's my new cologne, Pogo. It smells like Polo, but at a mere fraction of the cost.
I thought the line was, smells like cologne at a fraction of the price, which is, so what is it? I don't know. It's not cologne. So, you know, it was a free one for you television writers. A couple other just observations. I'm not a crackpot, but if you're going to have a character shaving their legs or other things that need to be shaved slowly, have them shave them slowly, not speed shaving their legs up and down with a razor. There would be no more skin left. Mm-hmm. If I shaved that fast on my face, there would be no more skin left. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm not a crackpot, but why can't sitcoms get even close to making a bar or restaurant look like a bar or a restaurant? They always look like two tables and something else on a soundstage. I don't understand why they can't fill the frame to a point where I believe that this might actually be, maybe if I squint my eyes, a real life location, or at least a location that is, you know, better with a higher degree of fidelity than they ever show. Anyways, absolutely fine. 24 minutes of sitcom. Nothing particularly for me to grab onto that's canon worthy. But an absolutely enjoyable watch. Allison, what say you?
Because I want there to be an episode in Living Single of Living Single in the canon, I want to vote yes. But I do not think this one is it. So I'm going to say no.
Sounds like you got homework.
I also want there to be an episode of Living Single in the canon. So I encourage Ellen or anyone else to submit. And I'm going to just say as a blanket statement, like, we are four honkies doing this. Like, you know, this is obviously, our reactions to this are very different from, you know, people who are people of color and watched it at the time when there was certainly much less representation for them. And it was certainly a different experience when it aired. You know, we don't know what that's like. So it hits us different. Absolutely. All of that said, I'm sure there is a more canon-y episode out there, and I encourage everyone to find it because I'm going to vote no on this. But thank you, Eleanor. That presentation was great. Sarah?
Yeah, everything that Tara said, this was delightful presentation-wise, and, you know, thank you for bringing me back to this show. But, you know, it's one of those, like, I think this show probably should have a representative in the canon. I am not qualified to say what it is. I just don't think this particular one is it. En conclusion, no.
All right, guys. Unfortunately, that means Living Single, Season 1, Episode 6, Great Expectations. We were hereby not inducted into the Extra on Rick and Morty.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has the winner.
I do. It's a two-pack, and it is under the rubric of allegedly, whatever, felonious leads of shows being subtracted from those shows and those shows continuing. First, Leverage is being rebooted, sans rapey Timothy Hutton, allegedly. And Noah Wiley will be in the lead. I think this is perfect Wiley product for this time in his life and ours. And also, When Calls the Heart, they got rid of Lori Loughlin ages ago. Allegedly, just kidding. They actually did do it. But it has been renewed for season 8, and they seem confident that they can proceed without Cheaty McGillicuddy, allegedly.
Leverage? From a man animal? And loser of the week?
Well, you know, these are tough times. Everyone is trying to do their jobs the best they can. And so my heart goes out to Sacramento news reporter Melinda Meza, because she was at home in her bathroom doing a report on how to cut your own hair at home. And maybe she should have coordinated a little better with her husband, because she was doing this at the same time as her husband was in the shower. And so he came out of the shower while this was happening, and his peen was broadcast on live TV. So our loser this week, Melinda Meza of Sacramento, and possibly winner, Mr. Meza. Who knows? Who's to say? We will link that in the show notes, because it's pretty funny.
Oh, God. We will.
Speaking of peens, you know what time it is?
Oh, God. I hope it's game time. Is it game time?
Yeah, it's game time.
Oh, peen time!
We are between seasons, and as our longtime listeners know, that means it's time for non-regulation game time, where I make a game so that Dave can play.
Yay!
Today's game is Tube Tunes 6! Tube Tunes is back!
Wow!
It's been a while. You know how the game is played. You've heard it 5 other times. Dave, who is on his honor not to have peaked, will play a clip of an original song from a TV show. You tell me what show the song is from for 1 point. There are no hints. Mm-hmm. For you to know, no show is in this game more than once. Also, one song is a pre-existing song that has new lyrics for the show. Does anyone have any questions?
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Since this is a non-regulation game time, we're going to skip Steel Meals and go straight to Picky to see who is going to go first.
We will start with David.
So we're going to go David, then Allison, then Sarah. Are we ready to play 2 Tune 6?
Yes.
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 I am.
All right, Dave, please play clip one for yourself.
For myself. Here we go.
Connect the dots. La 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 la. Connect the dots. La 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 la.
May I play that for myself again?
You may.
Connect the dots. La 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 la. Connect the dots. La, 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 la.
I can't tell what is going on in that. I hear computery bleeps and bloops. And the only thing I could attach that to, and I don't think this is it, is Pee-wee's Playhouse.
It is Pee-wee's Playhouse.
I thought it sounded like Pee-wee, but it sounded a little modulated, maybe because of the background noise. So it was thrown, like it was something kind of adjacent to it. All right. Yay.
Good job. Allison. This clip is for you, clip 2.
This next song is dedicated to her, my girlfriend, Anne. I call it Anne.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-da.
That's Parks and Rec.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. It is. Clip 3 is for Sarah.
A day that takes us through the darkness. A day that leads us into life. A day that makes
expense.
Well, I crazy ex-girlfriend. Why not?
Can I steal this for no points?
You can steal it. Sure.
Sarah, this is a program that also featured your favorite B. Arthur. It was a very special.
It's the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, God.
Which I had never, I mean, I watched this when we first had that video that we borrowed a million years ago, but it had been a while since I'd seen Harrison Ford's face, like, trying to look anywhere but at what was happening.
We all know the Star Wars Holiday Special was a stem-to-stern shit show.
Yes.
But it's easy to forget it also, like, the sins within the sin, which is creating lyrics for a long-standing theme. Mm-hmm. Like, don't put lyrics to the Star Wars theme.
No.
You know, or like make a character hum the Simpsons theme in season 5 as they're strolling down the street. Those are things you don't do.
Yes.
I'm not Grandpa.
Okay. Clip 4 is for you, Dave.
And when we're on the street and you pull out a cigarette and say to me, "Oh, Mr. Mayor, let's go to your place," I say, "Portland. Oh, I thought you'd never ask, and I will." La la la, la la la, la la.
Is that Dune's Kyle MacLachlan?
Yes.
As the mayor from Portland in Portlandia?
Yes, it is.
Yay.
Wow.
Clip 5 is for Allison.
Manamana. Manamana. Manamana.
I feel like y'all are softballing me. Is that Sesame Street?
No.
No, is it the Muppet Show?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
It's this animal, right?
No, it's just some guy. Oh.
No,
some puppet.
Yeah.
All right, clip 6 is for Sarah.
Nobody likes Tidus, because he is a damn nerd.
Do you want to hear that again? That was pretty quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody likes Tidus, because he is a damn nerd.
There's a context clue in there for you.
There is. You want? If you can't tell what they're saying, I will translate for you.
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
There's a name in there, and I can't exactly nail it down.
Nobody likes Tidus.
Nobody likes Tidus.
Because he is a damn nerd.
Because he is a damn nerd.
Thank you. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
That is correct.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
Clip 7 is for Dave.
Okay.
Doug and Carrie, Doug and Carrie, Doug and Carrie.
Really good. That's good. That's good.
Is that the show that's always on at night in our bedroom because it's always on at night in the bedroom? King of Queens?
Yes.
How'd I figure that one out?
Clip 8 is for Allison.
And this first one's called Mom, You're the bomb.
That sounds great. Let's hear it.
You ready?
Yep.
You just count off.
We can just
start whenever you want.
And you taught me how to read. And you taught me how to read. But you forgot one word, two words. Knipchen? Knipchen? Why didn't you tell me? Knipchen?
I feel like I should know, but I don't.
Can I take a guess? I don't know what it is, but just based on the audience, is it Saturday Night Live?
Yes, it is. Okay. Garth and Kat.
Just the quality of the laughter. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Clip 9 is for Sarah.
This is Madonna. Call me in Miami.
I know exactly what I want. The groove is calling out to me. So I became my own icon.
RuPaul's Drag Race?
That is correct. Wow. From the Madonna Rusical.
My brain wasn't allowing me to go to reality show. Nicely done.
All right, let's get a score break.
All right.
Currently, David T. Cole's in the lead with 3 points. Yay. I have 2 points, and Allison Lohuff has 1 point.
Very close. All right, I forgot to say we have 30 questions, so still a lot of game to play. Dave, please play clip 10. It is for you.
In June 2011, the United States learned Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was fucking around with new centrifuges. Egyptian physicist Mohammed Wawa al-Mashed was hired to produce the catalyzed uranium. I was Tester Schumer shed while he was on vacation. Keep Iran from activating short-range nuclear weapons to destroy Israel.
Believe that is from the underviewed Patriot.
That is correct. I figured you would be able to place it, and then I didn't know if you would remember what the show was called. Okay. Clip 11 is for Allison. There's a strong context clue in that one, too, and Dave should sound it out for you if you couldn't make it out right at the end.
Please do, Dave.
Oh, let me see if I can just isolate that quickly for you.
Oh, my God, I just got that shit out of my head,
it's
too.
It's so good, though.
Okay, well, sure, I'll just say it. At the end, she says top model backwards in reference to pot leadum.
And by the way...
Oh, my God.
While I was making this clip, I realized she is clearly saying pop lead him.
Oh, really?
Yes, you can tell when you look at her lips. Is. Okay, sorry, Allison.
Is it America's Next Top Model?
Yes, it is.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Dave.
I feel like that's going to surface every 4 episodes for the rest of the run of Extra Hot Great, just so our brains will never be
burnt. I am comfortable with that.
Yeah. Okay, clip 12 is for Sarah.
We'll be the very model of a modern network TV show. Each time that we walk into this august and famous studio, we're starting out from scratch after a run of 20 years. And so we hope that you don't mind that our producer was not doing well.
We hope that you don't mind that their producer was not doing well.
We hope that you don't mind that their producer was not doing well.
We hope that you don't mind that their producer was not doing well.
Oh, fuck. That's going to get stuck in my head, too. Boo. Late Night with Seth Meyers?
Oh, no. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
No.
That fucking thing. Fuck.
Yes.
Never seen it.
You watched that episode.
That's the
pilot.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. In an amazing feat of randomizerization, Dave, please play clip 13 for you.
No.
It's your hair, your nose, your chinless face. You always need a hug. Not to mention all the manly apple teenies that you chug. That you think I am your mentor just continues to perplex. And oh my God, stop telling me when you have nerdy sex.
Oh, by the way, last time Kim was in town, we got some apple teenies and poured them on our good parts.
See now, newbie, that's the thing you do that drives me up a tree. Cause no matter how I rant at you, you never let me be. So I'm stuck with all your daydreaming, your wish to be my son. It makes me suicidal, and I'm not the only one. No, I'm not the only one.
That sure sounded like Scrubs.
That is Scrubs. Clip 14 is for Allison.
Teacher said don't, but I said it anyway, misbehaving.
Preacher said no, if you do, you're gonna pay misbehaving.
Kicking and spitting and cussing out loud.
Running through the house with a pickle in my mouth.
Playing in the street, look at me outside waving.
Just two little kids out there misbehaving.
Feel like I should also know that one. Nashville?
Oh, good guess.
Chicken McDonald's?
That is the Righteous Gemstones.
Oh, okay.
Allison, I could hear you singing that song, too.
Yeah, I would love to. As a matter of fact, I was it's like, why super did I know
catchy.
This?
Yeah. It's very catchy. Yeah, you should look it up. The whole thing is great. That's okay. Jennifer Nettles singing with Walton Goggins. All right, clip 15 is for Sarah D. Bunting.
We're whalers on the moon. We carry a harpoon. Mother and the whale, so we tell tall tales and sing a whaling tune.
Let me play the start of that, because there's an important word at the start of that you may have missed.
We're whalers on the moon. We carry a harpoon. Mother and the whale, so we tell tall tales and sing a whaling tune.
I don't know. Futurama.
That's correct.
Ugh.
Context clues. All right. Clip 16 is for Dave.
Why does everyone hate Paul? He ain't killed my grandpa. He don't do nothing at all. He just reads his mysteries. Yeah, you can solve them, Paul.
I feel like I should know this, but I don't. Can I play it again, please?
Mm-hmm.
Why does everyone hate Paul? He ain't killed my grandpa. He don't do nothing at all. He just reads his mysteries. Yeah, you can solve them, Paul. Grandma's boyfriend, Paul. Grandma's got a boyfriend. I asked Mom what...
Oh, no, I know this, but it's not clicking.
You do know it. You're going to be so mad when I tell you.
All right. It can't be it because there's another character called Paul, but I'll throw 30 Rock out there.
It's not. It's the Sack Lunch Bunch.
Oh, I John never would have remembered that. Nah. Guys, between you and me, I didn't enjoy that too much.
I know, but you watched it.
Yeah, but out of my head.
That song was good. The show was not great. All right. Clip 17.
Spread Eagle.
Is for Allison.
I'm the man in Reno, the police, the 5-0, a COP in the county of Washoe. Kind of my protection are coming through. Don't disrespect me and I won't shoot you. You down with COP?
Reno SD.
You down with COP?
Reno SD.
You down with COP?
Reno SD.
Support the police. Peace.
I hope this is Reno 911.
It is.
Okay.
What if it wasn't? What else would it be?
I wonder. That was what I was afraid that y'all would be like, ugh, no.
Clip 18 is for Sarah, and then we'll have another score break.
Am I okay with this? Totally.
Oh, sweet account.
Settle for me. Baby cakes, just settle for me. Smoky pie, I'm begging you, please. Can't you see the light? Sugar jugs, I'm so bereft. Demeaning terms are all that I have left of my masculinity. So settle for me.
So twirly.
Oh, God. I feel like we just watched whatever this is, and it's just sliding off the side of my brain. So... what better time to answer Benson?
You've already said the name of the show in another answer.
He guessed it. It's crazy. This one is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
And I have seen that episode.
It was a canon submission, but it was a long time ago. It went from Hawaii Times. All right, let's get a score break.
All right, Dave beginning to pull away with 5 points. Allison and I locked in battle with 3 points each.
All right, back to the game. David T. Cole, clip 19 is for you. As I lip sync for my life.
Okay, this is the guess just based on the sound of it. Is that Smash?
It is.
Oh.
You've watched this too. It's the pilot that's also in the canon.
I would have guessed Glow. That's really fun.
That was some big singing.
All right, it's cruel for me to give this to Allison to guess because she is a wonderful singer, but that's what's happening anyway. Clip 20.
Money can't buy your class. Elegance is learned, my friends. Elegance is learned. Oh, yeah.
That is Real Housewives. Is that correct?
It's yes. Keep going.
Of. California?
No. Real Housewives of New York City.
Oh, New York. Ah.
All right,
I'm sorry.
No.
I know the song, but I.
Don't be sorry for not knowing that, please. Okay, clip 21 is for Sarah.
I've got myself in a terrible jam. I hit my head and now I fancy a man. I should feel up, I've never felt so down. And they say I'm the worst actor in town.
Could not stop the clip before the rock scream, of course. Sarah,
no,
what is that
really
from?
Couldn't. Just saying this to my dog this morning. You are the worst puppy in the world. Toast of London.
That is correct. Clip 22, please, for yourself, Dave.
Very good. He grabbed the preacher's daughter. He aimed to shoot her at my crown. He cocked that crooked hammer back and he brought that hammer down.
Exactly. The bones are the skeleton's money. In our world, bones equal dollars. That's why they're coming out tonight to get their bones from you. The skeletons will pull your hair up, but not out. All they want's another chance at life. They've never seen so much food as this. Undergrounders have as much food as this. And the worms are their money. The bones are their dollars. And
the bullet ripped inside my...
I think you should leave. With Tim Robbins' son.
That is correct. Okay, Allison. Clip 23.
Oh, Lord.
Yo, West Beverly, my name is Dave, and I'm gonna give you all the songs that you crave. And all the babes are gonna be my slave. And all from a guy who don't even shave. Word.
Word.
David!
Is that Beverly Hills 90210?
It is, in fact, Beverly Hills 90210. All right, clip 24 is for Sarah.
Girl, I want to fight for you. I want to cry with you. I want to wear a nice shirt and a tie for you. More than a couple, we could be a team and together chase dreams.
When we are together, I could play forever. I like your blue eyes and green dress. My friends think I'm crazy, but I was thinking maybe I want to marry you at recess.
I mean, I don't hate this song, actually. This is the other two.
That is correct.
So good.
Okay.
No, okay. Yeah.
Strap in for this one. Okay. Clip 25 for you, Dave.
Make some noise. A1 ratings, 80K wine. Never gonna stop, baby. Fuck Father Time, bro. Don't get it twisted. I've been through hell. But since I stand dad, I'm alive and well. Shaper of views, creator of news, father of many, paid all his dues. So don't try to run your mouth at the king. Just pucker up, bitch, and go kiss the ring. L to the OG. Dude, be the OG. A-N, he playing. Make some noise. When I say L, you say O, G, L to the...
Is that from Succession?
Yes!
I don't remember that.
And we haven't gotten there yet.
Okay, good. Okay, phew. I thought, and dementia setting in. I just watched that whole series in the last 3 days.
No, there's still coming up. And believe me, if you think you won't still cringe when you see the whole thing, you will.
Okay.
All right. Good job, Dave. Clip 26 is for Allison.
And a one, and a two, and a three.
Boom, boom, boom.
Baby unborn, how I've adored that sign on my car's window pane.
Hello? Human fly here. Come on. I stayed up all night dyeing my underwear.
That is The Simpsons.
That is correct. Clip 27 is for Sarah D. Bunting.
You don't do business with foreign spies. You don't keep slush funds. You don't tell lies. History knows what you've done. Republicans, Democrats, in between us, tired of your high crimes and misdemeanors. The founders and the framers foresaw, but nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law.
Okay, just for the record, if I weren't sure what it was already, the snort from Dave would have confirmed.
Oh, it wasn't a snort. This is from it was the a good raspberry. Fight.
It was a fart noise. Sorry, Dave talked over your answer. What was that, Sarah?
It's the good fight.
That is correct. Can we also get a score break? Fart. Everyone has one question left.
All right. It's basically over, but David T. Cole has 8 points. I have 6 points, and Allison has 5 points.
Excellent showing from everyone. Dave, please play your last clip, clip 28.
Call me Colin Kaepernick when I take a knee, because I want to get my tongue in your chocolate galaxy.
Oh, my God.
And when I say galaxy, I mean,
take me to your chocolate galaxy. That's the only place that I wanna be. Fellas, if you wanna blow your lady mind, wanna get a head, eat it from behind. Chocolate galaxy. Chocolate.
No idea.
Do you wanna guess?
Did I hear a laugh track in there?
You heard laughter.
I don't know, Atlanta?
No, that's a pretty good guess. It's Jesus and Mero.
Oh.
With John Legend. I thought you might get it from the voices. No. From their voices. Okay. Clip 29 is for Allison.
Lighten up, it's just fashion. It's fashion, fashion. Lighten up, it's just fashion. Lighten up, it's just fashion.
Oh, that voice is familiar.
Hold on. Play it again.
Yeah.
Lighten up, it's just fashion. It's fashion, fashion. Lighten up, it's just fashion. Lighten up, it's just fashion.
Oh, God.
Old school.
I don't know. I feel like I do know, but I don't.
Sarah?
Voice is familiar.
Is that Project Runway?
It sure is.
Oh,
Santino.
I should have. Yeah, right. Yeah.
All right. Clip 30 is for Sarah D. Bunting.
I might be an athletic, but I'm built like a giant. And I'm wearing white socks like an angel that's flying. Met a blue jay that's fucking an Oreo. You're royally screwed like a marlin exposed to the oil that a pirate or a mariner spilled out his tank.
That's a Cardinal sin, Padre.
Man, tell it to the ranger. You feel brave, little cub. Try to stop me, but when I'm seeing red, gonna get rocky. A Dodger feels beat your blood, Red Sox soggy. Astrophysicists make you see stars promptly. I'm more hopped up than a brewer that's hyper. City being style when I'm Yankee on my tiger. I'm staring at a Philly with some major league twins. If you didn't know by now, I'll name it baseball team. Let's bash.
If you can get anywhere close to the title, I'll give it to you.
Is this the thing that we watched when I was at your house?
Yes.
I can't remember the fucking name. Is it like the Bash Brothers?
Yes, it's the Bash, the unauthorized Bash Brothers experience. That's close enough. I'll
okay,
give it
thank you.
All right.
That was a work of art.
So good.
That whole thing was really good. I got to rewatch that shit.
It really is funny. I had a hard time deciding which of the songs to pull a clip from. Okay, let's get a final score break, please, Sarah.
All right. It was a pretty close game, but only one can win. It was not Allison with 5 points, nor I with 7 points. It was David T. Cole with 8 points.
Woo! Good job, Dave.
That was all a right. fun game, Tara.
I have a tiebreaker. Let's play it for Steel Meals.
Okay.
My brain turned off. But just to make it fair, let's say whoever wins has to give away their Steel Meals. They have to gift their Steel Meal if they win it to someone else.
Fair.
Okay. And shout it out when you know it. It's going to happen fast. Play that tiebreaker.
All right. You guys ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Sesame Street? No.
Dave's out.
I think I'll go for a walk outside now. The summer sun's calling my name. I hear you.
Brady Bunch.
Yeah, Sarah got it. Inside
all day. I probably could have listened to that whole thing. I never would have.
Me no, too. You singing it.
You wouldn't, but I mean, the opening chorus, it is the same, like, it's the same tune as Sesame Street, but yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, Sarah.
Well done.
Whom would you like to give your Steel Meal to?
I think that I will give it to Valued Guests.
All right, very good. Valued Guests now have 2 Steel Meals for when regular play resumes in episode 301.
Woo!
And congratulations to David T. Cole, our winner.
Congrats, Dave.
Dave. Thanks for another game, Tara.
Woo.
I love playing game time. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Grade. We took a stab at the crime drama Defending Jacob before going around the dial with stops at Vida, Andre Madrid, and I know I'm pronouncing that like someone from Alabama, The Last Dance, and Devs. Eleanor made the unsuccessful pitch for Living Single's Great Expectations for the Canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and yours truly was the winner of this week's non-regulation game time. Next up, it's the Cant-Non on Extra Extra Hot Great, the Kohler Wars on this week's Quarantine Helper, and on the next EHG Prime, we're talking Hollywood. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano...
Nobody likes turtles!
Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm here because I believe in the system.
And Allison Lohuff.
It smells like cologne, but what is it?
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Green.
When you want to drop the deuce, instead it's chop the deuce diarrhea. When you're hanging upside down and your face is turning brown, diarrhea. When it sounds like a horn, but poops out some corn, diarrhea.
Oh, God.
When some doctors like to treat it and some nurses like to eat it, diarrhea.